You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay tuned for the next 2.5 hours to Bathrobes Pier's Broadside, Civil Rights on the Streets for the Poor and for the Rest of Us.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM on your FM dial, and if you want to not merely listen but be a part of the dialogue and the discussion, you can give a call. Phone number is 427-3772, and our phone line, as far as I know, is working, which is always a pleasure here. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier, Robert Norris. I do a twice weekly show on civil rights, as regular listeners know. Tonight, or I should say today, we're not in the night yet, but sometimes it feels like it, we have interviews with Ron Taylor, Santa Monica activist and star of the homeless movie Taylor's Campaign, which was about a political campaign for city council that Ron Taylor ran when he was trying to draw the attention of the city to violations of homeless rights. This is stuff that has been tried as well here in Santa Cruz by such activists as Brian Koepke, Linda Edwards, Linda LeMaster. One might even stretch a point and say Rodent, who has claimed to be a at least formerly homeless candidate. And the idea being to draw attention to civil rights issues for homeless people. Of course, in this case, Rodent generally just runs a sort of a joke candidate rather than a true homeless candidate. Though I certainly invite him to call into the show and get on the air if he'd like to speak about his candidacy. I think that one part of the dialogue, which is really from the streets, from the tenements, from the people who are about to be ousted from beach flats and from other places, from the people who just can't get a room and have to live in their vehicles, really an important part of the community here that is not heard from, or heard from rarely and only on stations like this one, which I'm glad that we have this station available, but I'd love to see this whole thing, this whole issue of basic rights for everyone, particularly poor people, be a part of the general dialogue, and particularly around the election season, when it really needs to be considered, when we have to look at the record of our so-called progressive city council and really come to some hard choices as to what's going on. The real problem with city council races in the past has been you have a crew of office seekers who like to call themselves progressive, but once they get into office, or even before they get in office, pay no attention whatsoever to what is for me a primary plank of any really progressive person's platform, which is civil rights for poor people, and not to mention economic rights, which is another issue and equally important one. We're also going to be hearing an interview with Julia Vinograd, who is a poet. Actually, she's going to be doing more reading of poetry, new poetry as yet unpublished. You're going to be getting an advanced jump on the general public. She lives in one of the few cheap hotels still remaining in Berkeley, can often be found blowing bubbles up around Telegraph Avenue, and has taken a particular interest in the controversy around the sitting ban in Berkeley, which was turned back by the city council and with the able assistance or under strong pressure from activists on the street who were denouncing this new attempt to gentrify and exclude classes of people from such innocent conduct as sitting, kind of a following the Santa Cruz example and the Coonerty bill down here, Neil Coonerty of Bookshop Santa Cruz, whose downtown ordinances produced a current situation where it's $162 crime to sit down on the sidewalk in most places along Pacific Avenue. In fact, in any commercial or business district. So it's also illegal on Soquel, and it's illegal on Mission Street. And it's a very nasty law that many of us fought and are still fighting. And I'm very pleased that Coonerty was able to bounce out Super Crown Books. Good for him. Now, if he could only bounce out his own prejudices and these nasty laws that he helped to put into place, then once again I would patronize his bookshop. It would be nice also if he wasn't threatening to arrest me for trespass when I walked into the bookshop or into the Georgiana's Cafe, which shares, I guess, the same roof with the bookshop. Coonerty is quite a vicious and vindictive man in terms of political opponents, and he punishes you for your political speech. Particularly if you take strong positions against his local activity. That's something I mentioned in the past, something I will be bringing up again. But on this show, we're going to be looking into more current events. For example, the Beach Flats. I have several actually audible tapes of the Beach Flats Planning Commission hearing, which happened, I guess, almost a month ago now, if not more. A lot of articulate speakers, pro and con, mostly con against the what I call the Seaside Company giveaway, but some of the pro people are also going to be hearing from, at least from their Planning Commission speeches. I have not yet been able to get pro people on the air talking about the issue, other than one woman who bravely appeared, a resident of Beach Hills, and I'm still hoping to get a call from Eric Larson or Scott Kennedy or Mike Rotkin or Michael Hernandez or Cynthia Matthews. Hey, any of you people who want to appear on the air live and counter some of the criticisms that have been literally rolling and thundering out of the Beach Flats against this rush to judgment that's going to be coming down the pike within a month. Please give me a call at 427-3772. And of course, anyone can call in who has an interest in this Beach Flats issue or an interest in the issue of civil rights for poor people or anything that I'm discussing, or even some things I'm not discussing. I try to be broad in my latitude. Give a call to 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. 427-FRSC. Free Radio Santa Cruz. In the studio with me, I have not only my producer, but a woman who's been doing a lot of research around the Beach Flats, not to mention extensive videotaping and interviewing, and is preparing, I guess, a rather extensive 3,000-word article on the subject. But more important, she dug up lots of important questions to ask my guests, and you may recall, those of you who've been listening regularly, I had two guests last show. This show also airs on Thursday from 6 to 8. And at 6 o'clock, we had Linda LeMaster and Sandy Brown, who were both critical opponents of the Beach Flats housing element. And they talked about that as well as about welfare nationally and its impacts locally. But it's their talk about the Beach Flats that really I wanted to pursue, because I was intending to ask Sandy Brown a number of very specific questions about the housing element. Because for us, on the civil rights for the poor side of the issue, the traffic, the environment, the giveaway to business, yeah, all these things are certainly important and something we should focus on. But the real core, the touchstone for us, has to do with the destruction of low-income housing and the destruction of moving out of, making people homeless from that area. So I'm going to turn to Becky here, and I guess, Becky, ask you to run through some of those questions, which I'm not sure if you have them with you. Let me see. We may have them in this special folder, which I snuck into the studio here. Here we go.
Wow, that's really good.
And maybe what I'll do is ask you some of the questions you prepared for these candidates and see if you know the answers yourself. Maybe you don't. How long have you been researching this, Becky? And what have you come up with anything shocking or new? I know you were at the SCAN forum on Wednesday.
Too many questions. I can't remember them all. I was at the SCAN forum, and I've had my eye on this beach flats issue for actually a number of years, Robert, because the beach flats has always represented the lowest income people, the most affordable housing in the city of Santa Cruz, and there's been talk about redevelopment for the last 10 years. It's been a specter that has been hanging over the Beach Flats neighborhood. And so I was not at all surprised when this plan was promoted, but I am very surprised after really doing some investigation, and there are others who know more about it than myself. For instance, I have not read the entire plan, and I have not read the EIR, or what I've heard that's really good reading is the DEIR.
Draft Environmental Impact Report, I think is what you're talking about.
The DEIR is actually the final report that incorporates all the public comment in it. And that's supposed, I've heard tell that you can read that and it's like a gripping novel. The stories that different Beach Flats residents are reporting about how they've been treated and the dirty tricks and for instance, like the earthquake damage to houses that would be, you know, a pittance to repair, and they were given estimates of $60,000, and they didn't get it done. The house got red tagged, and now it's a bulldozed lot sold at below market value by people who did not want to leave. And that's one less unit of housing. The extent, Robert, of this housing that's that has been dispersed already, I think, is the big story. There are 25 to 30 units of Canfield-owned housing that Charles Canfield has bought up in the last 6 years that have already been vacated, and the people dispersed to God knows where. There's another unknown other units in addition that have already been bulldozed, dispersing all those residents. And so we estimate that the number of people from Beach Flats that have been dispersed is between 200 and 300 people already. And these are families, grandmothers, children, a lot of Latinos.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you saying that the 20 or 30 residences have been bulldozed and they each contain 10 people? Is that...
No, I'm saying, I said 25 to 30 units stand empty right now that are going to be bulldozed. Mm-hmm. Units of housing, affordable housing, that are not available to anybody, and the residents have already been dispersed.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get the 200 number?
If you combine the existing units with the estimated units that have already been bulldozed, and estimate five people per living unit. Remember, we've heard reports that the Beach Flats areas had the highest density population of any neighborhood in the city. That's repeated over and over and over again. I don't know if it's true, but it has been repeated over and over again. And so have that many units of housing that are no longer housing anyone. Where have those people gone?
Well, so in other words, you're saying that, I guess if you look at the 25, you're saying that 25 to 30 units are about to be bulldozed. That makes 150 people if we consider five in each.
25 to 30 are standing empty right now.
Right, so that makes 150 people that are being dislocated there. But
there are about 23 units of housing that are occupied housing that are in the direct path of the first phase of the Third Street realignment.
Okay, that's about another 120 people. So that's a total of about 250. 250 people. Is my math right here? Let's see. 30 units, 5 each, 150. Yeah, about 275 people that would be now. So in other words, this is only considering the houses that have already been bulldozed. Mm-hmm. The houses that are standing empty and the houses that are occupied. This doesn't include the houses that are bulldozed. Because if you're talking about the houses that are standing empty, and that's 23 mm-hmm. units, and the houses that have already been bulldozed, and you estimate 25 units?
25 to 30 are standing empty.
Okay, so that means that's a total of 275 people. That doesn't include those which have already been bulldozed. How many would you estimate that is?
That's the number that we're a little more shaky. That's why we say 200 to 300 people have already lost housing.
Then you're saying you're including those with the ones that are standing empty.
Yes.
Well, the ones that are standing empty, if they're 25 to 30 standing empty, that's 30 times 5, 150. So it's probably, you're saying another 25 or so were bulldozed, is what you're estimating.
Right.
So I guess one of the questions for somebody looking at this whole thing would be, has Canfield been buying up property in the area with not just the intention of expanding his boardwalk, as one would expect he would, but with some sort of knowledge in advance that there would be city council support for this, which would seem to me, of course, to be a form of corruption and possibly illegal, and certainly something that would give us pause if we're considering supporting in any way this beach flats giveaway or redevelopment or expansion?
Well, not necessarily. It could just be that he was very confident with his lobbying ability to get city council support, and he certainly is correct. I'm not implying any corruption at that level. The corruption that the general public needs to be alert for is when the dollars and cents just don't make sense. When city council members are giving away the store for no apparent reason, that smells of corruption, because one can assume that they're not stupid. They're not just giving away assets for nothing. One can assume that they're getting something out of it. And if they're not telling what that is corruption.
Well, it could be. They've claimed, I guess publicly it's been claimed by city council staff and people who spoke in favor of this plan, that an expansion of business downtown would provide a needed infusion of tax dollars into the city coffers, and that there would be, that what's needed, there is a situation where, this is the claim, that it's a high crime area where tenants are exploited. And what's actually happening is the city will, by sprucing it up, they will adopt a whole new different class of tourist. That is, I don't know, I think they call them from day trippers. You will now get the hotel stayers, and you'll get more money coming in through hotel rooms. What do you make of that?
Well, we tried to get some hard numbers on that, and this is not an unusual question for the general public to be asking. If we're putting up a lot of public redevelopment dollars, we want to know what's our return. And finally, through the pursuit of the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association, the Beach Area Working Group, and others, finally pinned down this Bill Tisling, T-Y-S-S-L-I-N-G, Tisling. He's of the Democratic Management Service, and he revealed that the projected revenue to the city would be expected to grow to only $88,000 per year from the city's investment in this Third Street realignment and the resulting boardwalk expansion, which is, by the way, the only part of this plan that is really kind of set in stone, that once it's approved, that will definitely go through.
Well, so we'll be getting $88,000, we being the city, we'll be getting $88,000 a year in taxes. And how much will we be paying in terms of property being given away and other perks and benefits to the Seaside Company?
Well, according to the report, it'll be about $3 million investment from the city. However, For those of us who examine how these projects usually go, and the estimates go up, they don't come down when these projects are developed. So a realistic expenditure would be about $3.4 million for the city to realign 3rd Street, to remove 23 units of occupied housing, whatever number of unoccupied housing is also exists on the site, put in sewers and sidewalks and all that infrastructure, which is usually paid for at public expense. But there was actually kind of a good letter in the Sentinel today. I don't have it in front of me. I don't know the I didn't recognize the author, but it said, since only the Seaside Company appears to benefit from this, why should any public dollars at all be spent on this?
Let's see, if there's an $88,000 benefit per year, and then there's $3 million.
Sandy Brown of the Campaign for Budget Fairness estimated that the city would break even somewhere, it would be over 40 years before the city would break even at that rate.
Well, that means it's an investment for our great-grandchildren, perhaps, or possibly just our grandchildren. Let's be generous.
Well, it's a big investment for anyone who is in the construction business or owns a bulldozer or is an electrician or all those kinds of developer-related jobs. They would get a lot of work and get a lot of our money out of it, and we need to see that it's invested wisely.
Well, if anybody's interested in joining this debate, you're listening to Becky Johnson, video journalist and Beach Flats plan critic here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop's Peer Robert Norris on Bathrop's Peer's Broadsides. Our phone number is 427-3772, 427-3772. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. We'll give you a moment and a little musical support to call in.
Come on, take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, and her glory shall rest on us all. From Colorado, Kansas, and the Carolinas too, Virginia and Alaska, from the old and to the new, Texas and Ohio and the California shore. Tell me who could ask for more? For here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, and her glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, and her glory shall rest on us all. Thank you.
that was Phil Oakes, a patriotic song from him from the 60s, The Power and the Glory. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and I'm here with Becky Johnson giving a quick look at the Beach Flats redevelopment plan, the 3rd Street realignment, La Bahia complex, the whole shebang, coming up for a fast shuffle at the City Council meeting. I guess it returns in September and is due to get a final rubber stamp either, I think it's in early October. Do you know the schedule on that, Becky?
It's September 15th is when City Council is going to be taking a first look at the plan, and if they could, if like a city ordinance, look at it that on the 15th and endorse it on a second reading on the 29th, it could go that fast. We're hoping it doesn't, because the public is not generally informed about this. The questions that we have not been answered. For instance, there have been a couple different things that have been promoted about this plan, that it was going to upgrade the housing in Beach Flats, which we've covered, which that it's going to provide a lot of revenue for the city, which we have somewhat covered. But one area we haven't covered is is it going to provide a lot of jobs for the city? And that area, we have to look at how the Seaside Company currently provides employment. The Western Service Workers Union has been investigating this since 1996. They formed a committee and to specifically to investigate this. And this is what the information that I found from that they reported to me. There are 975 workers at the Seaside Company currently, but only 75 are considered year-round employees.
How many union members?
There are zero union members. Not a single Seaside Company operation is unionized. In fact, Charles Canfield has gone to extreme lengths to prevent or expunge union activity when it has occurred.
Well, wait till Michael Hernandez hears about this. I bet he's going to boycott the beach boardwalk.
Yes, yes, Mike, if you're listening to it, you know, you put that union jacket on and give better change your tune about Charles Canfield. But we found that the average hiring wage is $6.15 for a person who's hired. This is no benefits, none at all. No health insurance, sick pay, that sort of thing. Of that, there's one two-year employee, just got her first raise from $6.50 an hour to $6.75 an hour. One man who works on equipment maintenance, he's been working there 12 years. He now makes $9.85 an hour. One 12-year employee who makes a measly $9.25 an hour. And another 15-year employee who's a supervisor makes $9.25 an hour. Very few of these jobs have any benefits at all. And even with the proposed conference center and expanded shopping district, the new jobs would mostly be hotel maids, wait persons, amusement park ride operators, and retail clerks.
Wait a minute, Becky. They would get free rides. They would have opportunities, probably, you know, hot dog perks. And, you know, they're next to one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. What do they want?
Yeah, that's what you get when you work in paradise. You can't afford to actually live here.
Some people don't care about anything. Some people are constantly complaining.
What we found, that the Seaside Company employees can't even afford Seaside Company housing because the car.
Wait a minute. Hasn't Michael Rotkin said if you can't live here, go to Fresno?
Michael Rotkin is supporting this redevelopment plan, and as far as I know. And he thinks that these kinds of he's been reporting that that this new hotel conference center, that there'd be all unionized jobs. But, you know, he's really trying to pull the wool over the public's eyes on that one. because there's no way he could guarantee that.
No, I understand that, you know, that the Seaside Company also provides religious benefits by bringing in hard-working Crusade for Christ workers from as far away as London, England, to work for summer employment at meager wages, but then after all, they are serving the public. And I also understand that many of the people working at the boardwalk find excellent housing in the homes and on the sofas of their own families.
That's correct, Robert. Most of
What are they complaining about?
The vast majority of Seaside employees, their housing is subsidized by usually a parent.
Let's get busy. I want to see some changes in the beach boardwalk. More rides. I mean, I need new rides. I'm getting bored with these rides.
Well, yeah, you and the American public are right in there together wanting these rides. Apparently, amusement park rides is a huge business right now. There are 350 roller coasters currently in the United States, and plans for 34 more to come online this year. And business is rosy. They estimate that if you bring in one of these giant roller coasters, you'll increase your business 13% to 14%.
Well, I would say every city council meeting is like a roller coaster ride for me. Sometimes makes me a little nauseated, but it's always a thrill. One never knows whether one's going to be arrested or muzzled or what. I mean, hey, I want to thank you, Becky, for being on the air to talk about the beach flats. Anything you want to conclude with before we swoop on to the next city council activity?
Well, I just want people to think about the downside. Say we have 13% to 14% increased tourist business and 13% to 14% increase, presumably, in funding to the city. We also have 13% to 14% increase in traffic, in crime, pollution, all kinds of sort of downsides too. And I don't think that's what people are living in Santa Cruz, because they want increased traffic.
Well, thank you, Becky, and thank you, audience, for those many incoming phone calls. Our phone number, I want to remind you, in case you fell asleep at the wheel and forgot, is 427-3772. We can use some interaction with you. We want to know, is this plan a good thing? Is it beach boardwalk giveaway, or is it a bonanza? What's the story here? Give us a call at 427-3772. Let us know your thoughts on this. Of course, my thoughts are, all my little jests aside, that not only does the plan suck, but the opposition, in sort of limiting itself to meetings and attendance at city council meetings and polite protest, is likely to find itself kind of on the business end of a shovel, and I mean the business end of a bulldozer, because I think that what's really needed for those who want to oppose this is high-profile protest, and protest in such a way that takes the issue right to the people who are backing this plan. And I'm talking about the Seaside Company. I think there should be marches every week to the Seaside Company, flyerings, educational activity. And I would also encourage those who are opposing this plan to get their own radio show and turn it out regularly, so there will be a strong and clear source of public information for this. Continue to urge you folks to do that, because it is available, time is short, and it's very nice to have city council forums where you can discuss the matter politely, and I'm pleased that that is being done. But I think that what you really need is mass protest from folks in the streets who are being affected, folks in the beach flats are being affected, sympathizers in the community who don't want to see the entire town turn into a huge parking lot for the Seaside Company. These are the people that can make a difference, and they have to be heard in loud terms, and I think that they have to be heard in creative terms, and the only way is to set our own terms, not to try to shoehorn ourselves into the 3 minutes that Shadow Mayor Mike Rotkin allows on the city council. I say Shadow Mayor Mike Rotkin because he has the majority on the council. Mayor Celia Scott has pretty much abandoned the fight. She's not running for election. She's given up on the issue, at least as far as any future political horizon beyond November goes. I, again, feel this is very sad, because I believe she could possibly pull two other candidates with her. Three candidates: Pat Clark, Chris Krohn, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Keith Sugar. It's almost a certainty to my mind that one of those will not make it, at least be bounced by some well-paid business PR person like Linda Steinow. So, that's my view, but hey, what's your view? 427-3772, give me a call. And let's hear a little something while I'm waiting for those calls from the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, a very funny gang from the Berkeley area. Free Radio Berkeley, which still does its broadcasts on the internet, even though it has been forced by judicial fiat to close down. We, by the way, continue and continue to seek your support. If you're interested in Free Radio Santa Cruz, when we're not on the air, or I should say when this show is not on the air, give a call to the voicemail at 427-4523.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now to a staff meeting at the office of District Attorney Harlow Griff.
By extension, so are we.
Coffee, Mr. Griff?
Yes, thank you, Alice. Well, I'm glad you could all make it this morning. I'd like to welcome Mayor Stank Florden, as well as Miss Kathleen K. Crud, and Mr. Douglas C. Slime from the Committee on Jobs. Before we get started, let me just announce that I've appointed Miss Carrie Quaxon here, one of our ablest state's attorneys, to be in charge of the framing, I mean the prosecution, of the Food.Bomb's defendants. And since we've called this meeting this morning to discuss how we're going to proceed on that matter, I thought it only appropriate to make that announcement now. And Miss Quaxon is not only a talented lawyer, but a very fine little singer. And she's agreed to start us off this morning with an inspirational song. Miss Quaxon!
Oh, yes. I'm so pleased to be here this morning. And I'm so thrilled our esteemed leader, District Attorney Harlow Griff, has passed the torch along to me in our six-year-long quest to neutralize the Food Not Bombs group. And I know we all have a great deal of civic pride at stake, and I know how wonderful we must feel about ourselves. After all, the future of our fair and noble city is at stake. And it was with that in mind that I wrote the following song. Well, we've all had enough, gonna run them out of town. Everybody, no more free food, gonna run them out of town. Grab the soup and the ladles, it's time to all get down. Well, Food Not Bombs has had it, you know that's plain to see. We got lots of evidence, you know their history. We got the New World Order established locally. Well, we're going into court with our heads held proud and high. Yeah, we're going into court with our heads held proud and high. We got the judge in our pocket and we barely even have to try. We're gonna take that Bill of Rights and we're gonna dump it in the trash. Yeah, we're gonna take that Bill of Rights and we're gonna dump it in the trash. We got martial law and our coffers are full of cash. Well, we're district attorneys, we practice legal Tai Chi. Yes, we let Bullock and Girard and the ADL off scot-free. But if you're serving free food, we'll lock you up and throw away the key.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, it's time to get on business now. We'd like to thank Miss Quaxon for that wonderful song. It's also quite gratifying to know that the framing, I mean the prosecution of the Food Not Bombs cases, is in such competent hands. I would, of course, handle this matter myself, but I have my liberal image to think about. I mean other business to think about. You know how it is. Pressing district attorney type business. Oh, my goodness. The pressures of running this office. You have no idea. Mayor Stank Florden, you have a question.
Yes, I do have a question for Miss Quaxon.
Yes?
Damn it all, Miss Quaxon. I want some guarantees here. These Food Not Bombs vermin have bedeviled me for 6 long years. They're an embarrassment. I entertain foreign dignitaries in my office, and there those scum are serving food and committing other disgusting acts of charity in plain view of my window. I tell you, it's ruining the image of this city. And I want some assurances that when you go into court and argue this case, you're going to be confident of a conviction.
Oh, did I leave the impression that I was going to be handling this case personally? Oh, forgive me. No, the district attorney, Harlow Griff, I too have a public image. I mean, other pressing matters to take care of. And that's why I've passed the legwork on to my capable subordinate, Mr. Lou.
Mr. Who?
Lou.
Well, Blue?
No, Lou.
That's true.
Well, who is Lou?
That's him.
Where?
There.
Where?
Sitting down there at the other end of the table.
Well, why doesn't he say something?
He's meditating.
He's what?
Meditating. Mr. Lou meditates every morning between 9 and 11.
Oh, but he's a real dynamo in court.
He combines ancient oriental wisdom with astute knowledge of the law. The result is inevitably a devastating combination of habeas corpus, deportus, fascis, comportus.
Yes, yes, exactly.
He's never lost a case.
No, never, never.
So Mr. Lou will be taking the credit for bringing these food not bombs criminals to justice.
Well, what in blazes is he meditating about?
I don't know. What's he meditating about, Miss Quaxon?
I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder what he is meditating about.
Goddamn these Anglo-American rat fuckers.
Well, whatever he's meditating about, I'm sure it's very spiritual and very noble. And speaking of nobility, I think it's time now we heard from the Committee on Jobs. Miss Kathleen K. Crud, did you have something you wanted to interject?
I most certainly do. As a member of the Committee on Jobs, I'd like to remind everyone that while we're quibbling over the relative merits of a simple court case in front of a judge who's on our payroll to begin with, I mean a good, loyal citizen to begin with, we have a far graver matter to consider.
Speak on, Miss Crud.
I'm referring, of course, to the taking of the Food Not Bombs case to the UN Commission on Human Rights in Geneva, Switzerland, not to mention, oh God, Amnesty International. Now, we all know that as Americans, no one values human rights more highly than we do.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
And for anyone to suggest that we would be guilty of human rights violations is just absolutely moronic.
Undeniably, yes.
But what, we must ask ourselves, will be the consequences of having the name of our fair city dragged through the mud by the United Nations?
What indeed?
I think what Mrs. Crud is trying to say is that we must figure out how to minimize the public relations impact.
Exactly.
Very well put, Miss Quaxon.
Well, after all, I am seeking a judicial appointment. Seeking what's best for our city.
In other words, it's damage control time. Now, we can count on our friends in the local news media to bury the story. Give the story its proper perspective. But our influence over the international news media is not quite as extensive.
And that's what concerns me. What will it do to our city's international image if we are branded as human rights violators?
Not to mention what it will do to our poor Stank Florden's image, to become the first mayor in our city's history to be condemned by the United Nations and Amnesty International.
Ah, yes, I see.
My career would be ruined!
The poor man's been under such a strain these past 6 years. He's really teetering on the brink of a nervous breakdown.
Ruined, I tell you, ruined!
Why ruined? Just say you're proud to be called a human rights violator because it means you're tough on crime.
Hey, that's an idea.
But aren't we all possibly getting upset needlessly? I mean, it's possible, is it not? These human rights groups could always rule in our favor.
Possible.
That's right. Any chance the United Nations Commission could be bought off? I mean, reasoned with?
Well, we do have some exploratory feelers out in that direction.
Oh, please give them some money. Please.
Oh, get off your knees, Mayor Florden.
Give me some money? Give my wife some money.
Look, This is a game being played for high stakes, and nothing should be left to chance. And it's to that end that my colleague from the Committee on Jobs, Mr. Douglas C. Slime, has come up with a suggestion worthy of consideration.
Mr. Slime?
Yes, sir. My suggestion is just this. That we commission some famous artist or other to erect a statue in Civic Center. We'll call it the Goddess of Tourism.
Aha! And what would that signify?
Why, it would affirm the basic human right to shop, of course.
Aha, yes! Yes, symbolically representing free trade.
Yes.
I mean, freedom. Haha! That's good, yes.
Marvelous.
Indeed. Then we're all in agreement?
Yes, it's really quite moving.
Hey, look!
Yes, look!
Why, yes. Why, it's Mr. Liu coming out of his meditative trance.
Mr. Liu, would you like to add anything?
Yes, Liu, speak! As the main prosecutor in the Food Not Bombs case, I'm sure we'd all like to hear what you have to say. Why not a call statue Goddess of Democracy?
Well, that's just a bit radical, don't you think?
Yes, after all, we wouldn't want to give people the wrong idea.
Quite so.
Goddess of Tourism. It's a much preferable name.
Yes, Goddess of Tourism.
Goddess of Tourism.
If I were a judge, I would certainly uphold the city's right to call it the Goddess of Tourism.